Welcome to the latest edition of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. I'm Matt Velasquez, and I'm talking with beat reporter Charles Gardner here on Thursday, October 20th. And we are done with the preseason. Charles, how's it feel?
Yeah, it feels great. Six games down and now a week to go before the Bucks will start the regular season against the Charlotte Hornets, home game next Wednesday. So I think the Bucks have accomplished a lot. They've had a lot of changes here, even in the preseason, as we know, following the Chris Middleton injury. So there's a lot to digest, and we can talk about it here today.
All right, great. And you know, as much as you know, we plan on getting to a preseason breakdown and discussion of the preseason as we head into the regular season and the games that count. The news that takes precedence over that is the trade that happened on Saturday, you know, with Michael Carter-Williams going to Chicago in exchange for Tony Snell. At first, I was at the Badger game. I was at the Wisconsin-Ohio State game, writing my live blog, you know, focused on that, and someone popped in and said, "Hey, Matt, what are your thoughts about the MCW trade?" And I was like, "Not now. It's almost overtime. I don't even know if this is real. I thought it was a maybe type thing." And then a few hours later, in the middle of the night, when I finally finished with the Badgers, I looked up and I go, "Oh my gosh, that actually happened." So
it was a real deal, Matt. It was. And of course it happened at the end of, or the news broke at the end of the Bucks Bulls game. So it was kind of interesting. People were looking for Michael, and Coach Jason Kidd wouldn't really address it at that point, but we got it confirmed that the trade had been made. And both players did not play in that game. And that was probably one of the reasons, although we learned later that Snell had a sprained ankle, and that's still keeping him out, may keep him out of the opener next week.
Yeah, so this trade, at least from what I can tell, it's been pretty divisive in terms of people's opinions on it. You know, what's your assessment of the trade, and how do you think the Bucks did in terms of trade value for Michael Carter-Williams?
Well, first, I didn't like the trade at all. And I still have some reservations about it, but we all know that MCW was being shopped, at least during the summer. The Bucks were considering options for trading him. He certainly made a strong effort to get ready for this season. I actually think he will help the Bulls because they have Rajon Rondo, and you just kind of don't know what you're going to get from him. And now they have a solid backup. They had a lot of candidates behind him, but I wouldn't say they were strong candidates. So I think this is a really good trade for the Bulls. It could be a good trade for the Bucks if Snell can shoot and be confident. And he is a pretty good defensive player from what I know. And Jason Kidd made a point of saying at practice the other day that he often guarded the tougher of the two wings, or the tougher of the wing players on opposing teams. So let's see. Let's see about that, because that would be a big benefit. We all know that Chris Middleton was a fairly strong defender, a decent defender, and the Bucks are going to need someone who can guard these elite guards, or defense is going to be a big question again this season. So I think Coach Kidd was hinting that was a big part of it, not just his shooting ability. He's a 35% shooter from three. That's certainly better in MCW, as we know. And I just think it shows how desperate the Bucks are at that two-guard spot. A lot of the tweets that I saw from the national media after we wrote the story was like, really? You know, he's going to start? Well, I guess when I wrote the other day, the kid said he could start at the two guard. But I think that's just because the national media didn't realize what options the Bucks have at that position, which are not great. You know, Rashad Vaughn, who's been struggling throughout the summer and the preseason. So you can see why the Bucks did it. I have some reservations. You know, I talked to Sam Smith, who of course covers for Bulls.com, and I said, really, Sam, would Snell have played for the Bulls this year? And basically, he said no. You know, they had changed. They got McDermott coming along now. Obviously, they got Dwayne Wade. Snell has started for them in the past, but it didn't look like he was in the plans very strongly this season.
Yeah, my take is kind of similar to yours in the sense that I looked at the trade at first and I said, I really don't like this. But then I kind of moved my way towards kind of just shrugging at it. And, you know, it looks like the Bucks just kind of said, you know what? Michael Carter-Williams is not in our plans for after this year. This is the last year of his contract. We're not planning on a future for him here. We have Dellavedova, we have Brogdon, we have, you know, the guards that we want to move forward, and, you know, we're ready to move on to somebody else who can help us, you know, this year in a position of need, which, you know, is kind of where they're at. And, you know, some fans might look at that and go, oh, well, Tony Snell, he wasn't going to even play for the Bulls. You know, how good can he be? You know, what can he actually do? And that's the gamble the Bucks are taking. Because obviously, you know, you have to expect that the Bulls weren't the only team they talked to. This wasn't their first offer. This wasn't the first plan. I don't think Tony Snell is your number one option. No offense to him, but I don't think that when you're looking to make a trade, you're not going out there saying we need Tony Snell, let's bring him in, you know. And you know, so I think that they must have, you know, looked at the market, tried to find other options. They don't want to give up anything in the future. They don't want to leverage their future for this year, because you're not going to make up for Chris Middleton, and you're not going to be the same team you're going to be with Middleton. So you don't want to, you know, trade MCW and a pick, even a second rounder, for somebody to be a band-aid for this year. And so, you know, it's funny. I texted my brother-in-law after I heard about the trade, and he's a Bulls fan. And I said, so what's your take? Like, what do you think about this? He goes, I don't know. MCW, you can't shoot threes, and that's he goes, and that's what the Bulls need. The Bulls are zigging while the rest of the league zags, you know. He's not really sure what to think about it. But I checked out a poll on ESPN.com that as of a little bit earlier today, you know, they asked who won the trade, because everybody wants to know who won the trade, and you know, the 83% said the Bulls won the trade, getting MCW. And though looking at the map, they had a map there, and you know, Snell, the Bucks winning the trade by getting Snell, won Wisconsin. So you know, it depends on your perspective. Maybe that's some homerism, or you know, whatever it is. But I, you know, and the other thing,
MCW was not a popular player in Wisconsin. We know that.
We do know that.
And we know he tried, but I think the thing is, remember when the Bucks made the trade in 2015, the three-team deal. The whole thing was, and it was, as you remember, controversial because Brandon Knight was riding high. But now if you look back at that trade, Brandon Knight has not lived up to his potential in Phoenix. He's coming off the bench. MCW was coming off the bench. The Bucks took a calculated gamble.
Oh, yeah.
To say, if MCW shines, we're going to be glad to extend him. We will make him part of our core. Remember, they talked about him as part of their core. Well, but he never made it to that point. But what they did was say, we're going to take a look at him. He's not going to cost us right now. And then we're going to evaluate and we're going to make a decision. The thing I don't like is it keeps kind of delaying them finding that backcourt player that they need. But they're hoping that player is Matthew Dellavedova. You know, now if you look at it, they're putting all their chips in with Dellavedova. And it will remain to be seen if he can take on this big role. He didn't have such a big role in Cleveland. But early signs are fairly good for him. He finds his teammates. He started a game with 3 assists last night. You know, it's going to be interesting to see.
Well, the other thing,
but that was the gamble, remember? And they said, hey, we're going to sign Middleton, not the point guard at the time. It was Knight. And then they said, we're going to see how MCW responds. And it, you know, bottom line, it didn't work out.
Yeah, and you know, I was just going to say, that's what some people forget, is the decision the Bucks made there was, are we going to extend Middleton or are we going to extend Knight? They chose to extend Middleton, which everyone can agree was the right decision.
And unluckily for them, now, you know, that player in the, what is it, second year of his big contracts out for basically the season.
Yeah, and so, you know, they made the right decision. I mean, Tim Bontemps, you know, put out a player ranking from 1 to 100, and Middleton wasn't on there because he's hurt, but if he was, you know, he would be around 40. That's what he said on Twitter. So, you know, that's a pivotal player, a great decision that the Bucks made to keep Middleton overnight. But also, that MCW for Brandon Knight trade wasn't a one-to-one trade. You know, they got Miles Plumlee, who they like, and who they have extended, and they've made a fixture in their front court. You know, they got Tyler Ennis, who, you know, he did some things well, but ultimately they traded him for Michael Beasley. And so, you know, it wasn't like, oh, well, MCW was a bust, and so the trade was a bust, and it was a terrible idea to begin with. No, they got rid of Knight. They got three young players. One of them turned out to be a guy that they wanted to keep for an extended period of time. And then the other two turned into other players who they could try and help. Meanwhile, they got to keep Chris Middleton. I mean,
and who would have guessed that the player they would keep was Miles Plumlee?
Not me.
I
watched Miles Plumlee when I interned for the Pacers from 2012-2013 season, and he was in the early days of his career at that point. And it was, you know, that team was a very good team. That team went to the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, and so it was, there wasn't a lot of opportunity for him when he came in. He was obviously a step down compared to the rest of the guys because they were such a good team. And so at that point, I know for me, it was hard to see what he could become, but then he flourished when he had the opportunity in Phoenix to play with a team that, you know, needed him to step up. And that's what he did. And then he's continued that trajectory since then. And now the Bucks have, you know, given him a 4-year extension and like what they have with him.
Yeah. The other thing, I was talking to the Chicago writers, and basically they were saying Snell, you know, has some talent, good kid, not always real confident. And, you know, that's kind of set an alarm for me. You know, they need some confident players. They need some tough players. And we'll have to see how that works out. But maybe given an expanded role, given a bigger role, he will be able to embrace it, or he'll be able to shine. He's certainly going to get the minutes. There are minutes to fill there. So he's going to get a chance. And We'll see how he does. They may have to move on to something else after that. But he certainly, I talked to him the other day of practice. He has a great attitude about it. You know, he's kind of funny. When I asked him, I said, well, you know, you're going from the bench to a starting role. How stunning is that? And his word was mind-blowing.
That's what he gets it.
Yeah. So he said, well, it's mind blowing. It's a great opportunity. So we'll see how he handles it. And unfortunately, he's out right now. And it sounded to me last night, I asked Jason after the game about it, sounded to me like he's might not be back at practice right away. So, they're already talking to him about the concepts, and, you know, he's around practice. He's around the team. He was at the game last night, but, he said he hurt the ankle in a scrimmage or a practice with the Bulls. So wouldn't you know it, a couple days before the trade was made, but they don't feel it's super serious to keep him out.
Yeah. I mean, I can fully understand keeping him out until he's fully healed. And also, you know, sometimes you want to get a guy, you know, there's something to be said for throwing him into the game and letting him learn in the preseason if he can. But there's also, you know, no need to risk it. And you also get some practice on your belt, get to know your teammates in a setting behind closed doors. I can understand. I don't think it's a big deal either way. You know, I think one thing I forgot to mention about this trade is it obviously shows that the Bucks have some level of confidence in Malcolm Brogdon, because, you know, just looking at the number of guards that they have, he's going to have to get minutes.
Yes.
I mean, I don't see how he can.
Matt, that's a real good point, because, you know, what I'm hearing from Bucks officials is they feel that the point guard spot they have it covered with Dellavedova, Brogdon. Obviously, Giannis will do the playmaking, but they always see it from the side of, you know,
who's guarding the...
Yeah, we've heard this how many times, right? Who's guarding the point guards? And they even have Jason Terry that could do that a teeny bit. But basically, you're looking then at Brogdon and Dellavedova. So I agree with you, Matt. Very good point. That it shows the confidence they have. He is going to play. And he's struggled at times greatly during the preseason. But he's also done some good things. You know, Wednesday night against the Pacers, he really played some good defense, and he helped the Bucks kind of turn the game around. He was in on the unit with Monroe. They had a two big man lineup, Greg Monroe, John Henson. I think Terry was in there as well. And they did a real good job as a unit. So the Bucks are not going to just keep him on the bench. Here's a second round choice who is going to get some meaningful minutes.
Yeah, and sure he's older than some of their mainstays already, you know, but yeah, that's a lot to ask of a rookie to, you know, take over the second unit and be the leader of the second unit, you know, at least in the sense that he's the point guard, and the point guard tends to be, you know, the leader and the guy who's guiding the offense and the defense and kind of putting it all together, you know, so it's a lot on his shoulders, and we'll have to see how he adjusts, and I wonder how Jason Kidd manages his rotations and how many starters he leaves in, you know, during the second quarter or late first quarter when the second unit comes in to kind of, you know, ease that transition, you know, because that's going to be a very important part of the game since the Bucks, you know, yes, didn't have a good bench last year. They want to have a good second unit. They want to have a good bench this year, you know, so how do you, you know, make it easier for Brogdon especially to, you know, to run that second unit. And I'm not sure exactly what the answer is, you know, but I'm sure we'll see a couple different iterations, but it'll be interesting to see what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think the bench is much improved. If you're bringing Monroe off the bench, Mirza Teletovic, he started last night, but Coach Kidd is saying that Snell should get the chance to start. I think they want to bring Mirza off the bench for sure. So you're talking about Henson, Mirza, you know, Brogdon, you know, Jason Terry. They have more options than they did before, no doubt about that.
All right, so I think we covered all the bases for the MCW Snell trade. Now we can move into a little bit of a preseason wrap up, since the Bucks games are behind them and we're just waiting for the regular season opener. You know, so Charles, I'll kind of start with you. Where do you think the Bucks are right now, and what things stood out to you during the preseason?
Well, I think, you know, Coach Kidd was talking about them playing with more pace. They obviously want to run when they can, and that's been a problem during the preseason. He mentioned several times where there was a game against the Bulls where they had a great first half, ran the fast break, looked tremendous, you know, that first half against the Bulls, and then it just slowed down. They had a similar problem in Evansville against the Pacers. They got outscored on the fast break last night by the Pacers. I mean, that's not something that's going to be a formula for victory for them. They're going to have to push the pace, get some buckets in transition, and hope they can shoot fairly well enough from three. I think it's going to be improved. Obviously, they were last in the league in three-point attempts and makes, as everyone knows, for last season. But, you know, they're going to want to play to their strengths. That's Giannis and Jabari running the floor, and how much they can do that and still run a cohesive offense in the half court. The half court offense is going to be a work in progress, and I think that's something we got to see. Does that evolve? Does that improve? And then on the defensive end, you know, we saw last night a good center, a good young center like Miles Turner. He was running rings around him in there. So that could be a problem. They've still got defensive issues that they have to face. And, you know, with all the new personnel, I think Jason said something about it last night. You know, now they're adding another piece in Snell. So it took Chris Middleton out of the mix. You put Mirza in. Some of these guys, obviously Giannis and Jabari, they get got to know each other very well in the second half of the season. So there will be some cohesion, but they also have to all fit together, and that may take some time. So I think it's definitely a work in progress. We'll see how they start the season. And of course, often the preseason doesn't tell that much about how the regular season goes. We know that.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, you look at the preseason, just in the Central Division alone, you know, just every team was 3-3 except Cleveland was 2-4. You know, obviously that has no bearing on the regular season or our expectations there. But there was something in the preseason that I saw that, you know, part of it you could probably blame on the preseason, but something we saw last year, which was struggling to put halves together. You know, the Bucks had multiple games, you know, where it wasn't just the second half or the first half, but they had multiple games where they looked competent and competitive in one half, and in the second, and in the other half, it just wasn't there.
Quarters, Matt. How about the third quarter is already just incredibly difficult for them.
Yeah, and that's one of those things where, you know, yes, it's the preseason. Yes, a lot of those times, you know, it was the second half, and that's when the bench gets emptied and the starters aren't playing, and it's, you know, it's different guys than would normally be in there. I get that. But it's something that the Bucks did last year too, and it didn't, you know. And yes, you could say maybe then they didn't have a bench and guys were worn down or whatever you want to say. But it's that's the sign of it being a consistent problem. And I'm dubious as to, you know, how often they can string together full games, you know, because this team is going to have to be, you know, a 60-minute, you know, or a 48-minute team. I'm thinking football. They're going to have to be a 48-minute team every night, you know, in order to maximize their potential. I mean, they can't, you know, go through a lull of 6, 9, you know, 12 minutes and expect to win, you know, a majority of their games. You know, they just can't do that. Some teams can, and they're not one of those teams. And so, you know, that's something that I noticed, you know, kind of just, you know, watching the games that I watched and you know, keeping track of the team too. And one thing that I don't know if it's a takeaway, but when I was at the game in Madison, after the game, one of the things I don't think I was able to write anywhere, but, you know, after the game, Andrew Bogut came by outside the Bucks locker room and he was talking to Dellavedova. You know, obviously Australian guys hanging, talking out, and I don't know what they were talking about entirely, but as the media was allowed into the locker room, you could hear, you know, Deli saying something to the effect of, oh yeah, we've been working really hard. And Bogut said, yeah, it shows. You know, and so, you know, That's going to have to be the Bucks' identity, if we want to tie it all together into a preseason takeaway. You know, that's going to have to be their identity. They're going to have to work hard. Like, they're going to have to be, you know, a hardworking team, especially on the defensive end, you know, in order to, you know, have the best results they can get. You know, because when you lose a guy like Chris Middleton, you know, your room for error just falls off a cliff. You know, so you need to be the hardest working team on the court, and, you know, that's going to get hard when you have, you know, back-to-backs and you have, you know, 4 games in 6 days or 5 days or whatever it is, you know, and the schedule becomes unforgiving at times. And so they're going to have to find ways to, you know, to pull out their best effort in, you know, as many games as possible. I know that not every team does it every night, you know, but you're going to have to do that because they're looking up at a lot of teams, you know, right now as the current projections sit.
Yeah, I think they were 10th in the Sports Illustrated for the East, even behind the Knicks, ahead of the Bulls, but behind the Knicks in the new SI. One other thing I should mention that I saw during the preseason, and it was evident Wednesday night, was the rebounding of Jabari Parker. Certainly seems to have improved that, focused on it. He had 10 rebounds last night, and we all know that was a bit of a weakness in his game in his first couple years. And as a power forward, you know, he's told us, he said, I know I have to do more with that. That's a focus of mine. And he actually tied Monroe for the lead in rebounding in the preseason, you know, probably getting a few more minutes of Monroe, I'd have to check, but I imagine he certainly did. But 6.8 rebounds a game. And if he could be up there, you know, maybe even a little higher than that, 7, 8 rebounds a game, that would be huge for the Bucks. Coach Kidd said last night, look, we all have to do that. He said that's been a weak area. He acknowledged that's been a weak area for the team during his tenure. And he said, you know, that's really a good sign, the way Jabari is rebounding. He said Giannis has to rebound, the guards, Dellavedova, Brogdon, all these guys have to rebound, be able to start the break. And of course, yeah, the advantage when Jabari rebounds is often he's gone. He can get and go, he can handle the ball, he can get it to Giannis, and they can get it down the court quickly.
Now, speaking of Jabari, are we on the verge of a Jabari breakout season? Because, you know, there were a lot of flashes. I mean, you know, during the preseason and especially the second half of last year, that we could be on the verge of Jabari Parker really taking a major step.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it to me. He's certainly playing well. You know, Giannis, everybody nationally, of course, is talking about Giannis, and Giannis being voted the most, you know, the GM survey, which is always watched in the preseason in the NBA, where he was voted the top international player, shows what people are thinking about Giannis. But I think Jabari, can be right there with him, and certainly the Bucks are going to go as far as these guys carry them with the help of the supporting cast, but they're going to be the two guys out front. One mention about that GM survey, I kind of forgot about that, Matt. We should talk about that a second, because that's always very interesting. They're, you know, of course, the GMs picked Golden State and Cleveland to meet for the third straight time. There's always some interesting categories in there. Carl Anthony Towns, the player most GMs would like to build their franchise around if they could pick one player today. Very interesting there. And Giannis. And, you know, when I told Giannis about it, I honestly think he didn't know. Usually he's on social media and all that, but he was at practice, and I told him I had one question. I just wanted to ask him about that. And he went into a little dance when I told him. You know how he is. He was pretty pumped up about it. And he said, really? Really? Because, of course, he was named over Dirk Nowitzki, Paul Gasol, Marc Gasol was second. And, again, it shows his youth and how he's emerging. But just the fact that he would win that poll, even against some players who are getting older but are great, great international players, as we know, Paul and Mark playing for Spain, you know, Dirk playing for Germany and for the Mavericks, Hall of Fame career. That made quite an impression on Giannis, and he said, hey, I just want to make sure that I deserve it. And it was Coach Kidd's comment was very interesting, I thought, too, because he said, well, that's great. And he said, it's a wonderful compliment. He said, but, you know, we think, or, you know, basically he said he's working to make sure he's not just one of the best international players, but one of the best players in the world.
Yeah, you know, and
I mean, in the NBA, one of the best players in the NBA, period. Yeah.
Sure, sure. I mean, that's got to be the goal. And, you know, if people don't know, Giannis is a better dancer than he is a joke teller. So, you know, so we're already there. So, but talking about the GM survey, you know, for any of you who haven't seen it, it's been around for, you know, 2 or 3 days, whatever it is. But I'll give you a quick breakdown of the Bucks guys who made it into the voting. So for the category of which player is most likely to have a breakout season this year, Giannis was among the players receiving votes. He didn't figure into the top five, but he received votes. Mm-hmm. Most underrated player acquisition, you know, number one for that was George Hill going to Utah. But, you know, outside the top five receiving votes was Dellavedova going to the Bucks, and this is a good time to note that GMs couldn't vote for their own players.
Yes.
So, you know, it wasn't like John Hammond was saying, hey, that was a great deal.
No, can't do that.
Yep. And then,
that wouldn't be good. No.
Yeah. And then, which rookie was the biggest steal at where he was selected in the draft? There was a top seven because there's a tie for fifth among, three players, but Malcolm Brogdon and Thon Maker both received votes, in that. Best international player, Giannis. As we mentioned, which active player will make the best head coach someday? Jason Terry tied with Manu Ginobili for fifth. Former Buck, Jared Dudley, second place, behind Chris Paul at first. I think we can all kind of agree with that.
Interesting there. And remember that Jason Terry said he always thought he would be back with Coach Kidd, his teammate in Dallas for those years, and including the NBA championship year in 2011. And he said either as a coach or a player. So, you know, he's going to be doing a little of both, I think.
Yeah.
With the Bucks. Yeah.
And then going further down the survey, which player is the most athletic? Giannis figured in fifth, behind Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, Zach LaVine, Aaron Gordon.
It's pretty good company for athleticism, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Which player is the toughest in the NBA? No surprise that Tony Allen was number one, but Matthew Dellavedova came in sixth.
He has some grit. I think the Bucks fans are going to really enjoy that.
Yeah, I know that ruffled a few feathers. But, that's what these surveys are about. And then who's the most versatile player in the NBA? Well, the first with 75% of the vote was LeBron James, because he's LeBron James.
That's a good pick.
But then in second, receiving more votes than Draymond Green, was Giannis, as the second most versatile player in the NBA.
That's really amazing, isn't it? Yeah. That's above Draymond. Yeah.
Above Draymond. 10% to 8.3%. So, it's a difference of probably one vote, one decision, one GM, but it shows.
Still pretty interesting, isn't it? And it shows what we've always said with Giannis, that he could play really every position.
Sure,
he could literally, and some games he's playing multiple positions within a game.
Yeah. So now we're that's the end of that survey in terms of the Bucks being involved in it. So Charles, let's move on to what we project for this year. I mean, before we get to our wins projections, what would you say? Not putting a number on it, but what would you say a successful Bucks season would look like to you? What's the baseline for being successful?
Without the number.
Without a number, what's the baseline?
Well, certainly before Middleton was hurt, you had to think that they really wanted to get back into the playoffs. Some of the players have said that. I'm sure they still do. But I think that was certainly a goal. It remains a goal. And we saw with Jabari when he was injured, just because a main player gets hurt doesn't mean the team can't make up for that if the pieces fit well. And remember how the Bucks made the playoffs that year, even after Jabari going down with the ACL injury. So we'll see if this season can duplicate that. I think that'll be very, very interesting. I think, they want to be back in the playoffs. They want to be relevant again. The East is crowded with a lot of teams that are similar. And I'm thinking that without Middleton, they don't really have the ability to get to the playoffs. That would be my gut feel on it. That he's just such a big part of everything they've done. They may come close. It could come close. It could be when we get into the numbers. We'll see what we're thinking there. But I just think it's going to be difficult without him. And we've seen already the juggling they've had to do at that position to try to get ready for the season.
Yeah, and for me, I think a successful season is not going to be defined by whether they make the playoffs or not. I think a successful season involves winning more games than last year. I think that, even without Middleton, I think that would be a really big boost. Even if it's only a few more, you're saying, wow, we did this without having one of our top three players, our best pure scorer, without having him in the lineup for virtually the whole season if he's able to come back. So I think that that's where it needs to be. And in the games that they lose, they can't just be getting blown out or struggling a lot. They need to be competitive in games. They need to have a consistency where when you watch them, you know who they are and you know what you're going to get. And that's something they didn't really have last year. I think that's what they're building towards. A young team that's maturing, you would expect for them to grow in consistency, even with all the personnel changes. They have enough guys that are back and that are veteran guys and that know what's expected of them, know what they need to be doing, know what it takes to have success in the league. That, like last year, you know, we saw them beat Golden State, and we saw them beat, you know, Cleveland in a span of just a few weeks. And, yes. And then, you know, they also had games where they just totally just flopped and just, you'd say, how is this the team that beat Golden State? How is this team that, you know, that beat Cleveland in double overtime? You know, how is this the team that, you know, pushed some of the better teams in the NBA in those individual games that kind of just goes out and lays an egg against somebody who they should be competitive with? So I think that's what we need to see, you know, to consider the season a success, is they're building that consistency. And if they can get more wins than last year, then that's a more of a tangible thing. So in terms of,
well, that would certainly be progress. How many are you thinking?
Well, you know, looking around, there's a lot of different projections. I know that I've looked at some different, you know, more analytically based sites that have them in the low 30s. You know, I've looked at, you know, ESPN, USA Today, both have them at 39. I think I'm trying to get the right number here, but, you know, CBS, they had a panel of guys and had them about 36, you know, 35. So, yeah, I think when it's all said and done, I think the Bucks are going to be about a 36 win team.
I was going to say 37 or 38. Four game improvement, maybe five game. Let's say 38 at the upper end of it. 38 and 44, that would be right. That's still what would be a few games shy of the playoffs, and I think that's where I'd put them.
Yeah, and you know, the East, as you mentioned, it's got a hodgepodge of teams that we're really not sure exactly what they're going to be. You know, I don't know which teams they'll be better than other than Brooklyn and Philadelphia. But I don't think that they'll be the third worst team in the East, which is where 538 has them projected. 538 has them at 50 or at 32-50, you know, only ahead of Brooklyn, the Lakers, and Philadelphia in the whole NBA, which I don't think the Bucks are the fourth worst team in the NBA as currently constituted. I just don't see that.
I don't see that. I think, you know, the East will be very interesting because you've got, you know, Miami, now no longer with Dwayne Wade. You've got some changes, different teams in the East. You certainly got Boston looking very good. You got the Hawks now with Dwight Howard. You've got Indiana that looks like they've put together a solid team. The Knicks, you still got question marks, even with the Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah additions. The Wizards, Scotty Brooks, their new coach. But there's a lot of talk about the Wizards that their time is running out already on this young potential. And this is what the Bucks have to fear. You know, they have all this potential. At some point, you got to put it all together and, look at the Wizards. Everybody thought their time was here, and they got Bradley Beal, they got John Wall, and they might be running out of time to get that all to be where they thought it was going. So, you know, really could be interesting. Charlotte, pretty solid team that'll be here for opening night. And, you know, Kemba Walker and, you know, those guys with Charlotte are pretty good team. But nobody, Detroit, obviously improved under Stan Van Gundy. But nobody just stands out other than Cleveland.
Maybe
Boston, I would say. Cleveland and Boston. But after that, it's going to be, and Toronto. Cleveland, Boston, Toronto. But after those top three, then it's really going to be very interesting to see who moves up and who moves down.
Oh, yeah. You could convince me, you know, that there are like eight teams in the East where if you said, you know, a high number, I'd believe it, and a low number, I'd believe it. You know, like the Hornets, they had a really good year last year. They have a really good coach, and they seem to be building something, you know, and maybe they'll be a 45, you know, 46, 47 win team this year. And if you told me that they, you know, suffer maybe one injury and things started to unravel and, you know, have a little bit of a slump coming off a good year and they end up with 36 wins, I'd be like, well, that's not likely, but okay. Like, okay, I can see a reality in which that exists. And you go down the line to the Eastern Conference and, You know, I can see a bunch of teams like that. I don't know what the Knicks are going to be. I don't know what the Bulls are going to be. I don't know what the new look for this Hawks team is gonna produce wins wise. You know, it all really depends on, you know, how if Schroeder is the guy that they've wanted at point guard, and if he can, you know, pick up his play as a starter and as, you know, the guy that they've chosen, and what Dwight Howard ends up doing, you know, and all of that. So I don't know. You mentioned the Wizards. I don't know exactly what the Wizards are going to be, you know, with Beal and Wall and the issues that they have there, and the team's aging, and they haven't really, you know, they might have missed their window.
It'll be interesting. Yeah.
So, but no matter what, you know, we get to start figuring things out next week when the games count for real, when the Hornets come to town, and I'm sure not your favorite former Wisconsin guy, Frank Kaminsky, comes to town. I'm sure you're hoping he's not wearing the same jersey he was wearing in Chicago.
He better not wear that in here. I of course, was angry about it. But, you know, I know some classy White Sox fans. I want that on the record. And, of course, President Obama, I guess, would be one of them. And Jabari Parker. But I guess he heard it from people around Twitter, from what I've heard. So I probably don't need to put my two cents in there. If he wanted reaction, he got it.
But then he definitely did. I almost want him to wear it. That would mean the Cubs would still be around at that point, which is positive for you. Yeah, but I almost want him to wear it just to see what you do. Nobody else, just you, just to see how it goes.
If he walks in with that on opening night, yeah, we're gonna have to talk to the young man. I guess it won't do any good at this point.
I'm hoping that comes to fruition. All right, everybody.
All right.
Thank you for following along with this edition of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. The next time we talk to you, it'll be during the regular season. When you're looking for that podcast, the best way to find it is to either subscribe via iTunes or Stitcher, or you can always go to jsonline.com/bucks, where you can find all the latest stories, videos, photo galleries, and podcasts when they come out. And we also have our new Bucks Extra app. So if you download the app, and that's the best way for you to, you know, follow the Bucks coverage from the Journal Sentinel this year. The podcast will be there too, with options for you to download and listen and stream and all that stuff. So no matter what, you know, we have you covered, either via iTunes, Stitcher, online, or on the app. So pick your favorite way to follow, and we'll talk to you next time.